This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
Welcome back to the Oanda Weekly Podcast, brought to you with the Jazz FM Business Breakfast. I'm Johnny Hart. Each week I'm joined by Oanda Senior Market Analyst Craig Earlham to review the stories that made the business and market headlines, as well as look forward to the business week ahead.
We're forecast to meet our cyclically adjusted borrowing target in 2021 with £15.4 billion of headroom to spare. So, Mr. Speaker, there is indeed light at the end of the tunnel.
And there's no reason why the UK itself is not an attractive investment climate. We do find that an attractive environment, just like we do the Netherlands.
Lowering tax rates, rolling back all these regulations, these are all really pro-growth measures. It's already showing up in the economy.
So let's join Oanda Senior Market Analyst Craig Earlham. Craig, what was your market moment of the week?
Well, I think it's been particularly difficult this week because we haven't been short of headlines. We haven't been short of major political stories, whether that's this situation between UK and Russia, whether that's a Trump-related story, of which, of course, there is, as always, many, whether it's Unilever. What's been interesting this week is that we haven't seen big market impacts on the back of these. Now, some of these may have the potential to create waves in the future, but right now it seems that investors are pretty relaxed about them.
And in that summary, you didn't even refer to the Chancellor's spring statement. There wasn't much to excite, admittedly, and Philip Hammond painted quite a rosy picture. Things long term aren't quite as glossy, but there was some good news.
There was a couple of pieces of good news, if that's what we want to call them at this stage, if we want to celebrate 1.5% growth instead of 1.4% growth, if we want to try and find a way to decide that the deficit right now, after 8 years, is in a good position, rather than realise that despite all the austerity, we're still running a 2% deficit. Yes, then there are some pieces of good news in there, but ultimately it was just a lot of chatter. It was just a lot of filler, self-congratulatory.
It was very political, wasn't it, really?
These things always are quite political, and I think now that we've replaced the spring budget with a spring statement, and we now really have one main event each year and then one waffly event, which is what this one was, I think we're going to see more of it. I think the most disappointing thing about it was that it lasted closer to 30 minutes than the 15 we were promised.
But no Omni shambles, no pasty tax, though ironically there was a U-turn. There was a plan seemingly ditched to get rid of coppers, not policemen. This is one in two penny pieces, but there were so many negative headlines in the background. Apparently there's a U-turn.
Yeah, this is probably the most shameful of them all. This idea that we're going to get rid of one and two penny pieces, things that in today's society, let's be honest, are borderline useless, but that we are for some reason still attracted to. We saw plenty of people complaining even over the past couple of weeks. People are surprisingly attached to something which, like I say, is borderline irrelevant in today's society, but maybe this is that first move towards demonetization, the move away from coins and towards cryptos.
Ah, your favourite subject, cryptocurrency. And of course, that was in the headlines, albeit briefly. Google made this announcement that they're going to ban advertising in terms of cryptocurrency.
Yes, Google, like many others, and following Facebook's move, is concerned about not cryptocurrencies in general. They're not taking a position on the validity of cryptocurrencies themselves, but just the access and the ability it does give to people who are trying to take advantage of this craze and to make money and advertise promising returns with little risk, which is very difficult to achieve. And I think they've taken this move to ban cryptocurrency ads, and they have come down hard as well on other areas as well that does concern them. It's another setback for the crypto space. To be honest, it's been a quiet week or so for cryptos. This was one of the few things that has triggered quite a negative response. We saw Bitcoin now trading around $8,000, another little setback. It seems to have been a lot of negative headlines recently that's weighing on its price.
Let's turn to Unilever's decision to move its HQ to Rotterdam rather than London. In the light of Brexit, how significant is this move?
It's hard to decouple this decision from Brexit, despite efforts from Theresa May and Unilever themselves to claim that it's nothing to do with Brexit, it really is difficult to decide that it is legitimate and that it's not just a case of Theresa May trying to protect the her own party and Unilever also trying to protect this business. We've got to remember, it's moving its headquarters, or maintaining only one headquarters in Rotterdam. It's not moving its business out of the UK. It's not planning to remove any staff out of the UK, and it still hires a huge amount of people here. I think this is a very symbolic move. I believe it's going to be removed from the FTSE because it's not headquartered in the UK anymore. Again, another significant symbolic hit for the UK. Hopefully this isn't a sign of things coming. I don't think it is, but still, Theresa May, I'm sure, will be a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, as you said, it's very symbolic, and Theresa May and, of course, the Cabinet, the Conservative government, are going to be concerned that others may follow the lead of Unilever. It's too early to say, though, isn't it? Because we're still negotiating with the EU. I mean, we don't know what Brexit actually means yet.
Exactly. And I think this is a unique case. It's worth noting that not all companies are dual, have the situation that Unilever had, where you had one board here and one board there, and they decided that financially it might make sense to just have one headquarters. So this is quite a unique case. But on the other hand, you can't deny that maybe this did factor into it, and that is a bit of an embarrassment, because we weren't able to convince them that Brexit is irrelevant and still convince them that this is the best place for them to be headquartered. Of course, there are other situations involved in this, and they have been noted in terms of takeovers, etc. But it's very hard not to tie this partially, at least, back to Brexit.
Another crazy week in Washington with the departure of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, while TV commentator Larry Kudlow has been named as Gary Cohn's replacement as economic advisor to President Trump. As we know, markets don't like uncertainty, and this constant merry-go-round is pretty unnerving.
There's two ways that we can look at this. One is that there was a mild negative impact in the market to this announcement. So clearly we're not entirely immune, although compared to what we were seeing 6 to 12 months ago when we saw these major high-profile sackings, it would suggest that we are becoming a little bit more immune to it. But the fact there was that little negative reaction suggests that this is seen as a significant move. And it's hard to not agree with that. He's sacked someone who doesn't share his views and replaced him with someone who does. People want to see a well-rounded selection of advisors so that you can make a well-rounded decision. If you've just got loads of yes men, that doesn't bode well.
And of course, Gary Cohn was against further tariffs, wasn't he? And we're not quite sure about Larry Kudlow. I'm assuming he's with the president on this one.
It would certainly appear so, maybe not to the extent that one or two other advisors, Navarro, I think, seems to be very much in favour of tariffs, claiming that it doesn't necessarily trigger a trade war, but that would suggest to me he doesn't understand what does trigger a trade war and what other countries view this step as. But I think Larry Kudlow does seem more in line with Trump and Navarro's thinking, and much further away from Cohn.
Yeah, he's not a hawk as such, is he? But he's more conservative.
That would be the impression that we have been given, although let's wait and see. I think it's best that we judge a man on his actions and not necessarily on some of the comments which he's made on CNBC when he wants to be seen to be backing a president who is far more under fire than in most mainstream media than he is receiving credit.
So from President Trump, naturally links to Russia, he said. The current situation with Russia and the United Kingdom...
Allegedly.
Major economic implications for the United Kingdom in terms of our economic interests. We have major interests in Russia. We were talking about this earlier in the week. BP, for instance, 20% stake in oil and gas giant Rosneft, and there are many others.
Exactly, and that's why this story is particularly concerning for some. There's also political links as well, which people are desperately trying to find between the Conservative Party and Russia. We've only seen speculation so far. It will be very interesting to see if further links do come out, because this would come out at a time when the Conservatives are already very weak, relying on the DUP for support to have a majority in Parliament, at a time when they need to be united and are struggling to because of the differing views over Brexit.
It's amazing though, isn't it, when you consider that Russia can have such a bearing on the politics of both the United Kingdom and the United States.
It's almost like it's an intentional move to have an influence in Western
politics.
Stir
things up.
Exactly. I don't want to be one to speculate, but it seems that there is clearly something going on. I'm not even claiming to know a fraction of what that is. It's just very interesting that what we're seeing right now, it almost reminds me, for example, of what we saw with the annexation of Crimea. This came at a time when Obama was looking quite weak, when there was very little appetite for any form of issues with other countries, especially with Russia. And the next thing, the annexation of Crimea happened. It seems like Mr. Putin struck at a point of weakness or perceived weakness in the US, and what was the response? Reality, very little. Some sanctions, but there was not the kind of response which you would typically associate with the US. Now we have Brexit, we have a weak cabinet, we have a weak government, we have a weak position in negotiations, and it seems to me like Mr. Putin took advantage of this situation, or that's at least a perception that we've had in the mainstream media. Mr. Putin took advantage of this situation and used it as an opportunity to get something that he wants without expecting any major retaliation, because we don't have necessarily the support of our once strong allies. Mr. Trump is maybe unreliable, and we already seen from certain French officials, for example, this week, that some people have not been too quick to have our back.
Let's try and steer away from geopolitics for a difficult two this week and talk more economically, and specifically high street retail and online retail. It's been a very difficult few weeks on the high street, but decent results for Morrisons this week, and Zara has particularly impressed online.
Yes, a 41% jump in online sales for Zara. This always, once again, goes back to this belief that those who embrace online tend to do better than those who don't. Zara also has the combination of the fact that its prices are extraordinarily competitive, that it's still seen as, despite the price of the clothing, it's still not seen as a cheap brand. So I do think they have a very good balance here, and that's being reflected in their results. I was most surprised about Morrisons. Morrisons is a company I've questioned for quite some time. Their slow move online, their inability to almost find their place in the market. They seemed like a cheaper version maybe of Tesco and of Asda, but not cheap as Aldi or Lidl. So they kind of had that, it was sat in the middle. But it seems that their margins, now that they've been tightened, they are more trying to align more as a more luxurious version of Lidl and Aldi. But then Lidl and Aldi are trying to make strides there too. So the question is this a one-off result? Is this something that we can become more optimistic about? That's what we're going to have to wait and see in the quarters ahead. But still, I think we should celebrate it, because there's been so much doom and gloom about the retail sector recently. It's nice to have a good result.
Which links me to the United States and their inflation and retail sales data. What did you make of that?
The inflation data was in line with expectations, 2.2% overall, 1.8%, I believe, on a core basis. Worth noting that this isn't the Fed's preferred measure of inflation. However, it does give it is indicative of the trend. It suggests that inflationary pressures aren't picking up, which is what people were starting to associate with this tax reform in the US. Still very early days, of course, but this hasn't been seen. Retail sales were disappointing, but I do pay attention to the overall trend in retail sales. The monthly figures can be quite volatile, so let's not pay too much attention to the weaker retail sales figure. I think the inflation was in line, and that may potentially encourage the Fed next week to be a little bit more cautious when deciding whether to revise up their rate hike expectations, because if they've jumped to 4, then that does send quite a hawkish message to the markets.
And of course, we've got the Fed and the Bank of England reporting next week.
Two banks who are at least giving the impression that they're going to be very active on interest rate hikes. The Bank of England has been very hawkish recently, people still pricing in one, maybe even two rate hikes, and the message that you're getting from the Bank of England would certainly support this. I'm still extremely sceptical and very confused as to why they are pursuing this at this time. I think holding off by another 6 months wouldn't hurt anyone, but that's why Mark Carney is the Governor of the Bank of England, and I'm sat here with you discussing him. With the Federal Reserve, again, the economic projections, I think, are going to be absolutely key. Rate hikes pretty much fully priced in at this stage. Are they going to say three rate hikes or four? What are their growth projections, their inflation projections going to be? That's the thing that's going to move the markets next week.
Craig, we look forward to your thoughts this time next week. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.